America's biopharmaceutical companies have one very important thing in common, a common enemy. They're making great progress because they're collaborating in ways that they've never done before. In a matter of weeks, they've progressed from potential treatments for COVID-19 to antibodies and antivirals that have shown positive results to several promising vaccine candidates. Get the latest at pharma.org/coronavirus, because science is how we get back to normal.
Hello, PulseCheck listeners. This is Dan Diamond, and welcome to our special PulseCheck series on the coronavirus outbreak. Today, I'm in conversation with my friend Jeremy Siegel, the host of our terrific Politico Dispatch podcast, as we talk about the White House's warp speed effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine and whether there's such a thing as going too fast when it comes to this kind of work. Here's our conversation.
Hey, Dan.
Hello, Jeremy.
I saw you did a tweet on the Twitter recently saying, "Public health friends, are there best practices when you see someone maskless in a small enclosed store with you? Is there a smart way to engage and inform without seeming like you're scolding?" Adding that when you've tried to say something, it's gone consistently poorly. And I'm curious about the replies you got to this. But first off, I'm more curious about, tell me about the times you've tried to talk to people about wearing masks.
Oh, man. I mean, it's normally been a pretty quick encounter where I might point to a sign, because we're here in DC. The signage is up: please wear a mask when you're inside a restaurant. And usually the person rolls his or her eyes or gets mad and says, "Why is this your business?" I specifically asked a question because I went to a store on Tuesday that I used to regularly patronize before the coronavirus crisis. And I stopped going because I just noticed how lax they were at telling people to wear masks. So on my first visit there in 5 weeks, I went in. There were a few people not following the mask guidance that was on the door. I walked out and saw a young, muscular, strong guy, a couple inches taller than me, walking in. And all I said to him was, "Hey, they wear masks here." And that led to a minutes-long conversation where he said this was none of my business and wasn't my job to tell people to wear masks. I said, "Well, kind of. I'm a health reporter. I am reporting on this every day, and I'm just trying to inform people about the guidance." And that did not go well. I ended up being called a Karen by him and his maskless friend who walked up.
A Karen. What was the advice you received from your call out on it?
Well, I think there were the responses that were helpful, and then there were the many responses that convinced me asking on Twitter for anything is going to lead to lots of mockery. The best responses, I thought, were around the very gentle approach of, if you have a spare mask or know that there are spare masks around, direct people to them without offering any judgment. The other piece of guidance that I thought was helpful was, it's on all of us in some way to remind each other when we're in the middle of a public health crisis. This is not scolding. This is not advice giving. There is a viral threat that we're all facing, and the more we can do collectively to reduce that risk, the better it is for everyone.
I recently, or actually a while ago at this point, like before masks were even required, I wasn't wearing one when I was out running. I was running with my partner, and this woman was like 10 or 20 feet away from us, and we ran past her, and she just screamed, "Wear a mask!" And I do have to say, like, what you were saying about how even if, you know, that person didn't respond well, like, it'll hopefully be in their head. As poorly as I think this woman handled it, I have not gone running since then without a mask on, mostly because I don't want to get screamed at.
So I had a similar experience, Jeremy. Like, I think I had written a story, I think this was back in April, that the CDC was going to start recommending masks in America. That was a big deal. And I remember breaking that story and writing more about masks. And then I also went for a run without a mask, as public health experts have generally said is okay. And I was running through the DuPont Circle area, and a big burly biker on a motorcycle looked over at me while I was running, maskless, and said, "F you, wear a mask." And it was a surreal experience. I felt like I was one of the people writing about this thing that many Americans weren't ready to do. And here there's a motorcycle guy telling me to wear a mask while I'm running. Now, what's different between you and me is I do not wear a mask when I run. I have talked to enough public health experts who say that it's probably not a risk, almost certainly not a risk if I'm staying away from people, which I do. If I see a crowd of people coming, I veer off suddenly into the street. I hide in alleys to let them go by. And I usually just run in parks.
I guess this goes to show that I'm much more susceptible to shame than you are.
Well, or maybe you're just a better person.
Well, to get to a point where neither of us have to worry about this mask craziness, a lot of public health officials would say that that's not going to happen until we have a very successful vaccine for coronavirus. And you just did a big story looking at the Trump administration's efforts on that front. First off, those efforts are called Operation Warp Speed, which I just got to say is the coolest name ever. You talked with several people working inside of the Trump administration on Operation Warp Speed. What exactly is it, and does it deserve its name?
Operation Warp Speed is the government effort to rush a vaccine and other treatments for COVID-19, potentially getting the vaccine out by the end of this year or Inauguration Day, January 2021. The effort has brought military personnel all over the Health Department headquarters. It is a $10 billion effort in terms of funding. More funding may well come. There are a number of vaccine candidates that are under consideration. My understanding is somewhere between 5 and 8 are being looked at really seriously right now. There are 2 vaccine candidates that are close to late stage clinical trials. The way I think about it, Jeremy, is imagine something like the Manhattan Project meets Star Trek. And the Manhattan Project, that was the big military science effort to develop an atomic bomb. Star Trek, the TV show that invented the idea of warp speed.
Warp drive, Mr. Scott. Ahead warp 1, Mr. Sulu.
Accelerating to warp 1, sir.
Of zooming off and going so fast that you're across the galaxy in what seems like just a few minutes before a commercial break. But every time I hear the title Operation Warp Speed and the way that President Trump talks about the timeline, which sometimes seems to get faster and faster when he talks about it, I can't help but think about the sci-fi parody Spaceballs.
Prepare ship for ludicrous speed. Fasten all seatbelts.
Where the bad guys decide to go so fast, they end up going at, quote, ludicrous speed during the movie.
My brains are going into my feet. Oh.
It did not end well for them.
Are you all right, sir?
Fine. How have you been?
Fine, sir.
Good.
It's a good thing you were wearing that helmet.
Yeah.
What should we do now, sir?
Well, are we stopped?
We're stopped, sir.
Good. Well, why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Very good, sir.
Smoke if you got 'em.
And actually, I'm a little disappointed that I wrote a whole Operation Warp Speed story and didn't figure out a way to make a ludicrous speed joke.
Well, joking aside, your story really focuses on some of the potential dangers and pitfalls of pushing a vaccine too quickly. And I want to get into that. But first, I mean, isn't Trump totally right here? Like, we do need a vaccine if we're going to fight the coronavirus, right? Why not rush it?
I talked to a number of virologists, health officials, top administration people for this story. Everybody wants a vaccine. The question is the president being realistic about it? Luciana Borio was the top acting FDA scientist a few years ago. She then moved over to the pandemic preparedness team in the White House. Now she's out of the Trump administration. She made the point that we might not get a vaccine at all. Vaccine development is historically fraught. The fastest vaccine before this was the mumps vaccine. That took 4 years. Again, the president is trying to do this in a matter of a handful of months. Peter Hotez, a virologist down in Texas, pointed out to me that the early vaccines might also just be limited value. Maybe they will inhibit symptoms, but we'll still be able to spread the virus to each other. The more robust vaccines are probably going to arrive in years and years to come. The early vaccines might take a few doses, a few injections. So we'll probably have to get beyond whatever comes out of Operation Warp Speed. And what is making folks so nervous is a scenario where President Trump is publicly berating officials to go faster, or he's questioning the science, like we saw with malaria drugs, hydroxychloroquine, a few months ago. They just want the president and his team to level with the public that a vaccine, while absolutely the right aspiration, might not be the magic bullet that ends the crisis in a handful of months.
You're also reporting that there are trade-offs here with the development of a vaccine and rushing the development of a vaccine. Does focusing on vaccines mean less focus on, say, things like testing for coronavirus?
Outside of the top officials working on Operation Warp Speed, the people working on vaccines are overwhelmingly not the people working on testing. The government is big. It can accommodate many teams. Operation Warp Speed has incorporated different divisions across the health department that may have been doing things completely unrelated to the testing crisis a few months ago. But as I was reporting this story, I kept hearing that the president was really pinning a lot of his hope on the vaccine. And to me, Jeremy, that has a real cost. If the president believes that a vaccine is imminent and will fix a crisis that has already killed more than 125,000 Americans, where the case count continually builds, it could well be over 50,000 new cases per day very soon. That's a very different mindset than thinking that the vaccine may not even come and we need to invest even more in other treatments, other safety measures, and only count on the vaccine as a single tool, not the tool to end the crisis.
All right, we are going to take a quick break here to hear from our sponsor, or as they put it in Spaceballs.
Why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Very good, sir.
America's biopharmaceutical companies are teaming up to fight a common enemy, the coronavirus. They're testing existing medicines, developing new treatments and vaccines, and collaborating like never before. In a matter of weeks, they've gone from potential treatments to antibodies and antivirals that have shown positive results, to several promising vaccine candidates. They're working with doctors and hospitals on over 1,100 clinical trials and ramping up production to ensure these medicines are available. They're working with governments and insurers so that when new treatments and vaccines are approved, they'll be available and affordable for patients. And there's no slowing down. America's biopharmaceutical companies will continue working day and night until they beat COVID-19. Get the latest updates at pharma.org/coronavirus. That's pharma.org/coronavirus. Because science is how we get back to normal.
All right, we are back. I'm Jeremy Siegel here with Dan Diamond. And Dan, what are the risks of developing a vaccine too quickly?
Some of the risks of the vaccine can't really be known until it goes through trials or even when we start to see the long-term effects. If you look back at the 1970s, there was an effort to fight the swine flu with a widespread vaccine under President Gerald Ford. That effort went wrong. There were people who suffered from the vaccine and led to some fears of government vaccination after that. So if a vaccine comes too quickly and the science isn't there to back it up, that's a legitimate fear. I also think one risk isn't the vaccine itself. It's the risk that too many Americans reject a vaccine. That's something that infectious disease expert Tony Fauci, Surgeon General Jerome Adams have both warned about.
A lack of trust of authority, a lack of trust in government, and a concern about vaccines in general.
That there needs to be a comprehensive education campaign in the weeks and months ahead to get people ready to go and get vaccinated when the vaccine is finally here.
We need to engage the community by boots on the ground and getting community, particularly those populations that have not always been treated fairly by the government, minority populations, African Americans, Latinx, and Native Americans.
And if that vaccine is seen to be a political product of President Donald Trump, there will be some Americans who likely have skepticism. The president's earlier bout with malaria drugs made a lot of people nervous not to take those malaria drugs because it was seen as a cynical political ploy. But more broadly, we live in a moment of creeping anti-science about healthcare messages. There are public health officials facing death threats and intimidation, so much so that dozens have resigned during the crisis. But again, try gently asking someone who refuses to wear a mask why he isn't doing it. And trust me, because I've tried, the effort to get people to take a vaccine is going to be much bigger than simply developing the vaccine. And the faster it comes and the less infrastructure we have around that public education campaign, the harder it might be to get to the herd immunity that we need.
All right, let's say in the next few months, we have a vaccine. Are you going to take it?
I mean, you just heard me rattle off the risks of rushing. Would you take it?
I'm asking the question here. No. I think I'd ask you first if you think I should, and then I'd do it.
Okay. I'd really want to know where someone like Tony Fauci comes down. Dr. Fauci has shown integrity. He is a career government servant who's been in the job for 50 years. He has publicly vowed that he is not going to let a vaccine get out the door unless he firmly stands behind it. And he may be the number one health official in the government who can say no to Donald Trump. If Tony Fauci is getting vaccinated, I feel a lot better about the vaccine. If Tony Fauci is out on the street because the Trump administration kicked him out to get the vaccine out the door, I'm going to think twice before taking that product and putting it into my body.
So I guess the chain reaction is Fauci says take it, Dan takes it, Dan says take it, Jeremy takes it.
Dan, as a public health reporter, wants to be careful not to endorse or direct too many things. But I do think Tony Fauci is trusted for a reason. I just was looking at poll data last night about who the American public believes has handled this coronavirus crisis the best. Fauci's at the top of the list. 62% of Americans, according to a Politico Morning Consult poll, think that he has done an excellent or a good job. On the other end of the spectrum, 49% of Americans think the president has done a poor job. So if you've got Tony Fauci out there doing salesmanship for this vaccine, practically that's a very different message than Donald Trump standing up at a podium and being the only person saying, take it. If they're all saying take it, that's the best chance to reach all the corners of America who are only choosing select officials to listen to. All right, that is our show for this week. I'm Dan Diamond, and my thanks to colleague Jeremy Siegel for joining me on this show. Our producers are Annie Reese and Jeremy Siegel. Jenny Ament is our senior producer, and Irene Noguchi is our executive producer. You can subscribe to Politico Pulse Check on your favorite podcast app. You can help us by leaving a rating or review. That helps new listeners find the show, and it helps us understand how you're experiencing Pulse Check. You can follow Politico's coverage of the coronavirus in the Politico Nightly newsletter and in Politico Pulse every morning. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with you again next week.